This is a Defocus Media production.
Hey, everybody. I'm your four-eyed professor, Chris Levens, and I'm super excited to talk to you today. Our roll call is for new and experienced ODs, optometry students, and even those just interested in this profession. We'll cover a number of topics together, and I'll help you see them through a professor's eyes. Please take your seats. School's in session. Welcome back to the Four-Eyed Professor podcast. Today's episode is about a topic that actually doesn't get enough attention, I don't think. As all types of ECPs, eye care professionals, deal with light, because everybody deals with light. But in terms of more of an in-depth conversation about optimally managing light, it's gaining more ground, but still is underserved in terms of attention. And so that's the topic for today, and probably going to be a multi-episode discussion. But I want to dive into this to talk about some of the considerations that I think are critical for our ability to serve our patients the best, to allow them the tools they need to manage light, protect their eyes from light, optimize vision, all leading to greater quality of life. We obviously deal a lot about correcting vision, but there is a universal need now to bring light under control. And this deals with, again, managing light. So light's all around us. It's around us from the time that we wake to the time that we go to sleep. It's coming from all different directions. Some directions we actually have control over, and some directions we don't have control over. In other words, there may be office environments in which we can manipulate our desk and control the contrast and light at our workstations. And conversely, there can be polar opposite workstations where we and our patients have no ability to control the light around them. And that can have an impact. It can have a negative impact on our work productivity as well as our comfort. And as you know, one of the topics that we'll get to, it actually has an impact on end-of-day vision as well. And most importantly, it could have an issue on ocular health and the lack thereof. So light's essential. We actually need it for human development. There have been numerous deprivation experiments where various animal species have been put in environments devoid of life, and we watch their anatomy. And as it turns out, anatomical growth is aberrant. It's abnormal. The eyes in particular do not grow in a way they normally would when they are in environments completely void of life. So we need this. We need this for proper refraction development, proper anatomic development, and proper function. And I mention this because there's been a concerning global trend with regards to light and spending time outdoors. So when I flash back to my own life, you know, I'm 52 years old right now. So when I flash back to being a elementary school child and even a preschool child, I can't think of many days in which I did not spend the majority of my day outdoors, even during school years, where we had recess in the middle of the day, and as soon as I got home from work, did my homework, back outside. Well, now there's a whole lot more impetus to maintain additional time and maximal time indoors for the same age ranges. You know, one is just safety. My ability to veer miles away from my house with my friends was commonplace. Did I allow my own children to do that? No, I did not. And today's parents probably feel the same way, thinking of safety first. But now we're in the advent of the digital age and have been for quite a while in terms of activities, homework activities, now more screen time, Now more entertainment time with video games and iPads not really being novel, just being the norm. And I mention that because there was a global survey, and this is actually a little bit of an older survey. It was done in 2016, so 6 years ago. 10 nations, Brazil, China, India, Indonesia, Portugal, South Africa, Turkey, UK, USA, and Vietnam, performed again in 2016 and found that over the 12,000 patients surveyed, one in two children spent an hour or less outside per day. That's a huge difference from my experience as a child, and I'm curious about yours as well, but that's alarming. That's a massive swing. And so if we extrapolate what we already talked about, that light deprivation experiments have consistently shown alterations in anatomy in developmental years, but in refractive state, that leads us to this next topic. You know, one of the hottest discussion points in eye care right now is myopia progression. And myopia is really out of control. And we have all types of new methodologies to try to hinder it. The challenge with myopia progression, though, is it's not something that we get an answer tomorrow. So let's say you see a patient today and you have been trained in fitting myopia control lens X, and you talk to the parents, you fit the adolescent or child in this lens, and now they leave your office. Well, neither they nor you know exactly what happens next. And this is the most controversial portion of this topic. We have been attempting to retard myopia progression for many years in lots of different methodologies. We started with spectacle lenses, and now we're moving towards contact lenses. And unfortunately, a lot of the early evidence with spectacles found that despite our greatest attempt to manipulate refractive development, as it turned out, there was very little difference in terms of refractive change after the treatment. And the most concerning thing and the most frustrating thing for patients as well as practitioners is it takes a generation or two to find out what you did had any effect at all. In other words, if you initiate a treatment at age 8, 10, 12, you may not know for 10 to 15 years, assuming the patient was compliant with the treatment strategy, what effect at all you had. Well, one of the things that we can use as an addendum to our current approaches to myopia management is educating our patients with regards to safely spending more time outdoors. There was a study that found that just by adding an additional hour per week, not even per day, but an hour per week outdoors reduces the risk of being nearsighted by 2%. And so with more time, then we see more risk reduction. Nearsighted children on average spend an average of 3.7 fewer hours a week outdoors than those who were emmetropic or farsighted. So there's something here. And so this is a very easy addendum to a contact lens strategy, a spectacle strategy, maybe strategies to look at proper working distances for computer work, near work, entertainment use, as well as taking breaks and going outside, getting exposed to outdoor light. Optimally, if we could get our kids and our next generation of adolescents and children to spend at least 2 hours a day outside, you know, during the school year, we're getting help from the schools who still have recess hours. So our efforts are really minimal. That could actually add quite nicely to our current strategies that we've been employing with regards to altering the rate of myopia. And this is an example of the rationale why we're having this discussion, because this topic in particular goes really under-mentioned. And it's so simple, but something that we can actually really improve the quality of life of our patients long-term from something as basic as being cognizant to outdoor time. Well, what happens then during adult years? You know, we still have daily exposures to light, which impacts our enjoyment of the world, our general health, and also our day-to-day performance. We talked about workstations and office environments, some of which we really have lack of control over. You know, for years, we've talked about ergonomics, and we've tried to bring these topics up with our patients. And if our patients do have the ability to manipulate their workspace, we like to have people positioned a little bit higher than their work screen and not have the computer screen at eye level or above eye level. We like the patient's head and neck above it, so they're looking downward, much more in a reading posture. If the patient has stray light, we prefer it not coming from the face position or behind the head, prefer it coming in from the side. And optimally, if we have the ability to shade light with louvers or blinds or shades, where we can redirect some light, particularly midday, without allowing stray light to enter directly into the eyes. That tends to make people more comfortable, their work more productive, where they can actually complete their work by having a better ability to maintain focus and not have stray light going in interfering. We live, I mentioned before, the digital device age. Today, I've reframed that term. I don't call it the digital device world, the digital device age. Today, I just say, okay, we call that life. It's not going away. So I'm picking up my phone right now, and I'm going to go to my iPhone settings and screen time, and I'm going to admit to you that my daily average over the past week is 4 hours and 54 minutes on my iPhone. And that, embarrassingly, is 17% down from the previous week. Whoa. This is, and that calculation is solely from my phone. Well, what happens when I add my PC, which I'm also on right now concurrently, and I add my iPad, and I add my EHR, and I add my devices at home and my television? The amount of time that we're spending on devices is unfathomable. You know, it wasn't that long ago where these things weren't invented yet. We didn't have these challenges. Our eyes today are overstimulated to an extent that we would have never predicted 20 years ago. And anybody think these are going away? No, I have no idea what types of devices we're going to have in 10 years from now, let alone 20 years from now. But they're going to be there, and they're going to be within arm's distance of us. We're going to have them. And so we are dealing as ECPs with patients whose eyes are being bombarded by close working distances, added light, added stressors. In fact, I think if I polled the audience today and said, hey, I want you to think for a moment, what was and what has been, on average, the first thing you've touched when you wake in the morning and the last thing you touched before you went to bed last night? When I've polled audiences before, the most common answer is their cell phone, their digital device, which oftentimes is within arm's reach for them on their bedstand and last touched and first touched. These things are just part of life these days. They're contributing to an overexposure, have a large impact on our visual performance and actually on our general health as well. These are essentially today's adult, adolescent, childhood pacifiers, and they're not going away. And that brings me to a story that I've shared with lots of people recently. I was shopping online recently, and I was on Amazon, and I was buying a gift for a friend who was having a baby shower. And as I was scrolling through potential baby gifts, one thing leapt off the screen to me, and it's something I'll never forget. You know, you can purchase the mobile above the baby's crib. You can wind it up, oftentimes plays a lullaby, sometimes plays Brahms' lullaby. Well, today on Amazon, you can purchase, and a still looks like a mobile, but instead of having little teddy bears and pink elephants spin around, it's replaced with an iPad. Wow. There's going to come a time in short order where you and I are interviewing an adolescent and talking to them about computer use and digital device use. And you may say, hey, Susan, I'm just curious, when did you get your first digital device? And Susan looks back at us quizzically and says, well, Doc, I think I was about a week old. Literally, the pacifier of today are these devices that are not going away and really have some significant ramifications on our eyes. So the last topic that I'm going to leave you with for this portion of the discussion, because we really haven't gotten to the management piece, I'm really trying to set up the problem piece already. And so besides all the negative aspects of how the digital device age and life are challenging our eyes in a way to overstimulate them, I'm going to give you a piece of good news. And it's something that you can begin to work with tomorrow, if not today. Whenever we interview our patients and we pose questions to our patients, it feels best to us when we know the answer of the question that we're asking before we even ask it. That makes the conversation very simplistic. It never throws us off guard because we know what we're going to say next because we know how the patient's going to respond. And so here's the question. Because of this overstimulation and this inability to manage light effectively, quite frankly, as we started this episode, because it's an under-discussed topic, light sensitivity is a opening of the door, pulling back the curtain of a conversation that allows you to simply bring this topic up for conversation to all patients. Simply ask something like, hey, Mr. Smith, are your eyes ever sensitive to light? In your typical day, think of all the things that you do. Does light ever bother you when it gets too bright or you go from dark to light to dark? And frame it any way that you feel comfortable. Surveys have shown over and over again a very consistent response. When posed with the question of light sensitivity, over 90% of patients claim that they are. So pose the question. Almost always, you're going to get a head nod and an affirmative response. And all that then does is open the door for you to be able to talk about managing it effectively with your patients. That's the best news. You're going to ask a question, you know the answer, and that then allows the patient to elaborate on when they become light sensitive, in what environments. And now all that's doing is arming you with the information that you need to then properly address an effective way to manage light on their behalf with quality products that today do far better than they ever have done before. So in our next episode, we're going to continue this conversation about light management. And I'm going to try to bring up some ways that I do this both for my own eyes as well as for my patients in as low, in a non-complicated method, a way that's incredibly simplistic, does not take inordinate time to your examination. The patients respond positively, and best of yet, the best of the end of the story is once the patient hears a message, they understand it, they comprehend it, you then give them a practical application that then suits them. Well, what's next for them? It is being able to deal with this light, manage it more effectively and optimally, deliver them better vision, more comfortable vision, more productive work, all leading to better quality of life. And that's all we want for our patients. So thanks again, and I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. We will continue it in the future.
Class is ended for today, and we have no exams or grades approaching. Please email me at foureyedprofessor@gmail.com if there are topics that you would like to hear and see through a professor's eyes.